83% negative impact on your bottom line, I don't want that any day of the week. I don't care what it's about. That's hard to recover from.
My bottom line just left. It kind of went somewhere else. Yeah.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs and Security First IT. And joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin, doing all things compliance, privacy, and security.
Yes. Yes, we do. We do. We actually do security risk assessments and analysis and training and all of that stuff for people.
Yeah. So for the listeners, I had, I run a site for managed service providers, IT people, and teaching them about HIPAA. And one of them sent me a message the other day and was like, "So who do you use for your risk analysis stuff for your clients?" And I'm like, "Really? You don't know that? I use Cardin." So I told Donna about it. She was like, "What?" But I don't think it's not that he didn't know you did that. I think he thought that you didn't do it for the little guys as well.
Yes. We will consider all opportunities. We are not too big or too small.
Yeah. Have compliance, we'll travel. Mm.
I have people. I have people no matter what.
I know. It's one of the awesome things about the time we live in. You can do business all over the place. So much easier than you used to before.
Hey, I know. But, you know, sometimes you're glad about that and sometimes you're sad.
Right.
I know.
All right. Hey. So let's move into our next segment we normally do, which is where in the world will Donna be next?
Well, the things to report right now are I'll be at the Georgia Pediatric Practice Administrators State Conference in October 18th, which is down at the convention center down by the Atlanta airport, which is really cool. You can fly in, do a convention, fly back out. Boom.
Cool.
I won't be. I might be flying in my vehicle, but yes, I'm looking forward to that. And then we also have our boot camp.
I know. And it is filling up quickly.
I know. By the time this one airs, well, we will be past the super early bird pricing. And our super early bird pricing is getting a lot of activity. So, especially if a couple of those that say they're bringing multiple people bring as many as they said, we may not have space by the time this airs. I don't know.
Yep. So, if you are on the fence about it, you might want to try to get on in there.
Yeah, look into it quickly. We still have early bird pricing, and that will last, I think, until like the beginning of October. So you got a couple of weeks, but get up on it.
Yep. Check it out.
If you haven't yet.
TheHIPAABootcamp.com. So all your information's there.
All kinds of information up on there.
All right. So we've been asking for reviews, and we do have a few. So, hey, guys, peoples, if you haven't reviewed us yet, get out there, review the podcast. We appreciate it. We work for that. But we do want to talk about a few that we have because we like, you know, covering it. Because some people say, "I would love to review. I just don't know what to say. Or don't know how to do it."
Which we're going to give you some examples.
But we did get a note from George, which I think George is becoming a segment here on our show.
The George segment.
I know. So George writes in an email, "Hi there, in case you're not aware, your coverage of the Boston Children's Hospital hacktivism was also covered in the Darkneck Diaries," and he gives a link to it. Your listeners may find it interesting, and there'll be a link in the show notes, and it very much was an interesting podcast because this guy dove deep into the incident, which was kind of scary that people can do that, taking your kid away and stuff. He also writes, "By the way, the Beirut bank job episode reminds me a lot of what David would do and potentially screw up." Take a listen and see if you agree. George, I want to disagree, but I'm not sure. If I were in another country and didn't understand the language and everything, I probably would have done the same thing. It was a very funny episode. The difference would be that The guy that it happened to was very calm. I probably would have run out the back door quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like your hair was on fire or something.
Yeah, I would have just ran.
So the net of the whole thing is that when you're hired as a technical snoop and you go to get into these facilities, make sure you go to the right address. That's just, and I could see David potentially having that issue.
I could potentially, yeah. Well, you know, it's different because you're walking in the door and it's not like you're saying, hey, is this where I'm supposed to be? You don't really want people to, you don't want to ask anybody that because you're trying to snoop around.
It's awesome.
Anyway, but we also had a review, iTunes review.
Couple of them.
Yep. Couple iTunes reviews. Let's see here. 5-star review. All of them are. Yay. Yeah. So we hear from, looks like Betsy Crouton.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you need to know about HIPAA, you need to listen to this podcast. Great info and all types of providers and professionals. So, yeah, thank you there. And also the RBC Chicago girl says, the hosts are hilarious. All caps. I enjoy listening to stay up to date on current events, their perspectives, and quite frankly, their humor. Or excuse me, for some humor. thanks for the podcast and for the chuckles that each episode provides. So thank you. You know, humor is our thing.
Yeah, which brings us to the other
we got our first YouTube review. So thanks to the YouTube reviewer who does not like our podcast. The YouTube reviewer says that we should not be making humor of some of these serious incidents and therefore they will not be listening. So I thank you for your review, even though you're not listening to this. Maybe you'll come back around and understand why we make it humorous.
Yeah. And we have had listeners let us know that in the beginning they said, well, you know, you guys are laughing about something very serious. And then they eventually got it. So, yeah. You know, if we were droning on about this stuff and never laughing, we would have been done before we even finished our 50th episode. I just said,
yeah.
I couldn't have done it myself. I couldn't.
No, but Donnie is the type of person that, you know, cracks up at a funeral too. So just so you know.
I have laughed at a funeral.
But
it was part of my family and we have done things. So anyhow.
Yeah.
My family's that way.
Yeah. Honestly, that's the best ones. You go to a funeral and there's people that are laughing because they're remembering the good times with the person that passed. I mean, that's the way it should be.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So anywho.
Yeah, we're not supposed to have a funeral. It's just so you know, David, for me, there will be no funeral, only a party.
I would say I can't wait, but that kind of doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't. Does it? Uh-uh. It's supposed to be a party.
Yeah, it's a party I'm not looking forward to, but I'll be there.
Thanks, David. Glad to know it.
Yep. All right. So that brings us to today's topic, which is how much does trust matter in healthcare? We talked about this recently about the crisis of trust in healthcare, but we've got a new study that was done that which kind of points to this and gives a lot more credence to it.
Well, yeah, it's not just looking at healthcare in particular. This is looking at more or less how all of these data breaches and all these problems with online security is impacting the consumer trust in all businesses, but it does reference some specifics about healthcare that really made this a good topic. But the big news that it really put out, I mean, how important it is to protect consumer data. And then, of course, we always know that we have the most valuable, the one they get the most upset about losing. Mm-hmm. But the point of the big news out of the study was 78% of consumers responded that it is very important or crucial that their PII, or their protected individual identifiable information, mm-hmm. be protected online. Virtually no respondents indicate that protecting PII is not important. So everybody thinks it's important. It's just something is more important than others. No one at all in the study said it's not important. 86% indicate that a high level of data protection is a priority, when they're choosing online services. Now, again, this is them, you know, in a survey, and we both know that people don't understand necessarily what a lot of that security stuff says.
No, because I find the most interesting point was that a lot of people are talking about how security is very important as long as somebody else is doing it.
Yeah, I know. I need somebody else to take care of this for me. A headline that also said is, consumer trust around digital data protection is flagging. And David asked me if this is the right word. I copied and pasted right out of the thing.
So. Yeah, no. My usage of that word is kind of different.
But I guess
it can fit.
Yeah.
It's kind of a gamer term though.
Yeah. So while organizations believe they're doing a good job of protecting consumer data, the statistics don't bear it out. The good news is that a consensus is forming among organizations that investing in technology to protect consumer data is critical.
Amen, now, sister.
Preach it, brother. So the study looked at this from an interesting viewpoint. It said, let's interview, or we're going to survey consumers, security professionals in organizations, and the executives in the organizations, and look at how their perceptions compare to one another.
Okay.
Would you believe there's some disconnects?
Yeah, I would think there's a lot of disconnects. There's no doubt there's disconnect.
Yeah, there's one graph that really brings it in, that they you know, make pretty colorful pictures, and basically is asking, would you choose security over convenience? Now, this gets back to what we just said of, yeah, as long as somebody else is doing it.
Right.
But 86% of consumers say they prefer security over convenience, right?
Bullocks.
Yeah. Now, I doubt that when you put them to the test that it would be 86%, but it would certainly still be up there, you know. They might get a little irritated with the lack of convenience, but let's say it drops to 76%.
Okay.
Still, the security professionals say that security should take preference. 52% say security should take preference over convenience because they're the ones that are hearing all the yelling.
Right.
You know? So they're the ones that you've got 52%. And probably if you said, okay, what if you didn't have to listen to all the yelling, that number would shoot up.
Yeah, 99.8%.
Yeah. But, you know, they're just beaten down at this point. You and I understand it, you know. And yeah, there's plenty of times I have to stand my ground.
Yeah. And we don't really know what question was asked. It's just
how it was actually. Yeah. But I could dig into that. But the bottom line is there's a big disconnect between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And that 10% probably drove the 52 from 62 down to 52.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the other piece, though. So you'd think business executives would be kind of in line with the consumers because they're consumers. They're not technical people. But they say 59% are the ones that say security should take precedence. So everybody's thought about security being over convenience, like our rules. Number one, security's not convenient.
Mm-hmm.
86% of the consumers think security shouldn't take, you know, it's security should come first over convenience. 52% of the security pros and 59% of the business executives think security should come first. So there's a big delta there.
Yeah.
And that disconnect is, that's part of the problem.
Well, it's like I said, I think consumers don't understand necessarily what the security is. They're just saying that it's important that other people have it in place.
Yeah.
It is not important that I use it. Because we do things like, you know, try to get clients to use LastPass for their password management, which is a phenomenal tool to speed things up. But in the beginning, you're not faster, you're slower because you have to get it set up.
Right.
And man, you would not believe the pushback we get after somebody, you know, the first time they can't get into something. You got to remove this. I can't use it.
Yeah. This has got to go.
Yeah. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Because security is not optional is rule number two.
Yes.
Yeah. So until everybody gets on those pages together, you know, that's going to be a hard, you know, cookie to not crumble. Mm-hmm. So it is how the cookie crumbles right now. And we know that that impacts these numbers. And so it's the consumer's understanding of how you have to be inconvenienced versus the business execs and the security over, you know, customer satisfaction. So, yes, there is a big difference, but I think there's a lot of education that needs to go on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we educate the consumers more, I think the numbers would change for the security pros and the business execs. But here's the bottom line is there is that misconception.
Mm-hmm.
And so when companies and consumers are asked the same kind of questions, then we start to see that consumers trust companies one way or another based on their perceptions of this security. Right or wrong becomes irrelevant then. So organizations are saying, we're probably getting people, you know, what was this? They believe that about 75% of their consumers trust them. However, 61% say they trust organizations, and 14%, a difference there. I mean, come on. That is huge. Because
mm-hmm.
they don't believe you're doing security. You're not doing security because you don't want to hear them yell about it. But then they're saying, well, I want security, and I don't trust you because you're not doing it. And so there we have that loop. It's the dog chasing the tail. You can just see it going round and round and round. But then we look at the big ticket number, because now we're talking about just how much trust we're losing. So if consumers, and this includes patients, don't trust you, how much does that really impact you? How much does that really matter when we look at it from a healthcare perspective? And they did break that down, because one of the things that they were really looking at was that how much of a negative impact does a data breach have on your business?
Mm-hmm.
And they look at both consumer trust and the bottom line. So I was like, this will look interesting. And then they broke it down by industry. And when you read the paragraph leading into this, it says, healthcare organizations are by far the most likely to report strong negative impacts on consumer trust and their bottom line as the result of a data breach. Did we know that?
Yeah.
It even goes so far as to say it is, quote, not surprising that healthcare organizations suffer greatly after a breach.
Yeah. Problem is they don't realize that until after the breach. Then they're like, I didn't know it was going to cost so much, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know it was going to make people so mad.
Yeah. You know, I figured, you know, I didn't have anything anybody wanted.
Yeah. Or, you know, we're too small, we're too big, we're this. I'm sure we've got it covered.
I have insurance.
I have insurance. All of those things that we've talked about repeatedly. But, you know, as in that episode we did a while back about talking to your boss about it, mm-hmm. and getting them to understand what it means when these things go wrong. This is what it means. So 86% of the healthcare industry companies surveyed said that they suffered strong, and they put that in all caps.
Yeah.
So that meant they were
negative impact.
Strong negative impact as a result of the data breach when it came to consumer trust. 86%, a strong negative impact, consumer trust. So I am not a gambling person at all. And 86%, I'm paying attention.
Yeah. If 86% is the strong negative impact, that means that by the time it filters down, it's almost 100% negative impact.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to have some sort of negative impact. Well, remember, no one said that security didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody believes it matters now. So if I have 86% of the healthcare companies saying that after they had a data breach, it had a strong impact, and let's say, be clear, a negative impact. It did not have a positive impact at all.
Right.
After a data breach in consumer trust. And then even more important, 83% said it had a strong negative impact on their bottom line.
Yeah, that's the number that gets people's attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's hitting you twofold. So it's hitting your bottom line, but then it's also making it harder for you to make that up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 83% negative impact on your bottom line? I don't want that any day of the week. I don't care what it's about. That's hard to recover from.
My bottom line just left. It kind of went somewhere else.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, there's got to be some wiggle room in there because, you know, people with surveys, it's different than the real world thing of, are you going to not see this doctor anymore? Or, you know, there's a litany of variables when it comes right down to it. But still, 86 and 83, those are numbers that you can't make go away.
Yeah.
And when you think about how much this will matter, and I can assure you, when people are in the throes of dealing with one of these data breaches, and every question we ask, they don't have a good answer to, mm-hmm. they're getting more and more stressed every single time. You know, I don't want to have to tell everybody. Well, you're going to have to tell everybody if we don't find a better way to answer some of these questions, which is what they pointed out in the survey. They found interesting was that financial services, you know, so financial services and healthcare go back and forth on who's the number one attacked industry.
Right.
And lately, the last few years, healthcare just keeps staying up there. Right.
Yeah.
They just stay up there.
It's the low-hanging fruit.
Well, it's because when you look at financial services, they had 31% consumer trust strong impact and 29% bottom line strong impact. Those are things that you can address with plans and things like that. It's a whole lot easier to imagine being able to recover.
So the spread between financial services and healthcare on these two things, customer trust and bottom line damage, the spread is 50 plus points.
Yep.
Golly, that's crazy.
Who you going to bet on? Yeah. Which horse you on?
But that speaks to a lot of problems.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the, when they say in their evaluation in this study, though, they're looking at trying to find, you know, what indicators would make that such a dramatic difference? I mean, that's massive.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at real world numbers and millions of dollars, here's why they believe after their evaluations, there's such a difference. The study found that financial services firms may have higher immunity to the negative impacts of data breaches because of their swift reaction to incidents, including the cancellation and reissue of credit cards, forced password resets, proactive fraud prevention departments.
Frog.
And frog. I can't even get it. Frog. And security awareness campaigns directed towards customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically, they have a plan.
Right.
And they execute that plan immediately.
Mm-hmm. So they're proactive or quickly reactive to things.
Yes. And they have these things in place. Now, if I try to do the flip side of that and look at that from a healthcare perspective, it's swift reactions to the incidents. Okay, healthcare does not have that. We know that.
No.
We've seen it over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Because it's just everybody panics. Nobody knows things. It's crazy. We can't cancel or reissue a medical record.
Mm-mm.
Most people, it's not involving a consumer password.
Right.
So forcing a password reset on consumers won't make a difference. Maybe on our staff, but how often does that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. That goes back to the first question.
Security.
It should happen for somebody else.
Yeah, as long as it's not me.
That's right.
Proactive fraud prevention departments, meaning they're looking for the problems.
Right.
You know, well, guess what? That requires some of those monitoring applications that no one wants to spend money on.
You're exactly right. Preach it again, sister.
You know, that's exactly what our friends at Sphere are, you know, the clients they work with, that's what they're getting. And their app and the ones like them where it's machine learning and you're teaching it what things are okay or not. And it then detects when something's an anomaly. You know, I've gotten that call, haven't you, on your credit cards?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This isn't what you normally do, and we thought we would check. And I'm like, I don't do that.
Every time I travel somewhere, like the first time I stop and get gas, it won't go through because it's like, oh, you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. And you got the geo blocking thing on there.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it caught mine when it said, now I'm sitting at my desk all day and I get a call from American Express saying, have you gotten gas today? Because you never get $50 worth of gas in the morning and $50 worth of gas in the afternoon. I'm like, I have not gotten that kind of gas all day.
Yeah.
I may have other gas, but it's in my house. So it's not a thing that healthcare does.
Yeah. But I will say, if anybody has looked into these types of technologies like 5 years ago, they're drastically different today. They're so much less expensive. These things have come down to where the small businesses can afford them. And if you haven't looked into these things recently, then you should take another look at them. And if you need a number, let me know.
we can hook you up.
Yeah, but there's things that we're able to offer our clients now that, I mean, not even 12 months ago, we couldn't afford to do it because it was too expensive.
Yeah, and so those, you know, the large organizations have said, oh, that's too expensive. And when the prices are drilling down to the point that smaller organizations can afford it, I'm sorry. It's and this goes back to what we're talking about here, is that proactive fraud prevention. We don't do that in healthcare.
Right.
We're supposed to be doing it, but everybody relies on these random audits of patient access, or they're only looking at VIPs, you know, or things that are in the news. Well, that's not where the fraud's going to come from. That's where people are going to sell stuff, you know, or, you know, use it against them. But you're not going to see that same level as, hey, why did that person just download 10,000 patients? They never do that. And, really? They're leaving and they're taking that with them?
It's a thing. It happens.
Yeah, it's a thing. And that happens more than most people know. So healthcare, you know, we don't do that proactive fraud prevention. It's really not something that happens. We don't respond quickly. And security awareness campaigns towards customers. So why are we not trying to educate our patients?
Yeah.
You know, you never see somebody educating the patients. And, frankly, I would love to develop things educating the patients, but I'm so busy educating the staff.
Well, the bad thing is if you educate the patients, then they're going to turn around and ask questions to the providers and that they can't answer.
Which is exactly why everyone's hesitant to do it.
Exactly.
And we got the dog chasing the tail again.
Yeah. But we've talked about this before on the podcast too, that the public is starting to get more knowledgeable about it. Sometimes they think things are HIPAA. They're like, oh, isn't that a HIPAA violation? It's not. But it brings a lot of attention to something that, even if it's not a HIPAA violation, it's still something you don't really want to talk about in the press.
Yeah. And they'll bring it up. You know, they'll report you to HHS, which triggers an investigation. They'll report you to a reporter, which is even worse, because then eventually that does end up with HHS.
I saw a recent question. Somebody said, do sports figures waive their HIPAA rights? Because every time they get to the hospital, it makes the news. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, they don't understand. A lot of people don't understand that your health information, depending on who gives it out, is may not be protected. You know, if the team manager gives it out, it's not a HIPAA violation.
Yeah. No, that's the internal issues with the company. Now, if somebody gave the team manager the information without your approval, different ballgame.
Yep. So it is a fact-specific determination.
We haven't worked that one in a little while.
I know. I missed that one.
That was good. I know. It's a fact-specific determination. But financial services firms are prepared for these things to happen, and they take immediate action. So that is where that investment shows up. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine why there would be any, you know, other than, of course, people lying, which we can't do anything about. But, you know, like the folks in the study, I can't figure out why they would have such a lower number because, again, they're hand in hand with healthcare as far as the number of attacks.
Right.
So I have to go with them.
It may be that, at least for now, in this environment, you hear so much more about the healthcare breaches than you do anything around, you know, financial services.
Well, I don't know. Equifax?
Well, that's just it. I mean, how many people actually consider that to be a financial service? They may think financial services are credit cards, banks, and stuff like that. Equifax is a, you know, they're talking about credit reporting, and they may not make that connection that it's a financial service.
Well, and again, the financial services don't have the level of information to worry about that we do in healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's another thing.
Yep.
So there's a whole lot more sensitive information. So we should actually be more worried than they are, you know, but everybody just, you know, let me worry about my money. Wait a minute. You know that about me? I'm going to sue somebody, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very different world depending on, it's a fact-specific determination on how bad it's going to be.
Yeah.
But that strong number, strong. That's the part that got my attention, the all caps strong.
Yeah. And it's not going to get any better. The regulate, you know, we talk about this sometimes, and we hadn't mentioned this in a long time, but HIPAA is not going away.
So many, you know, people.
There were some people at the last election that was like, yeah, HIPAA's going to go away when another president comes in the office.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as the election's over, I don't have to do HIPAA anymore. I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah. But it's, you know, we talk about GDPR, and if you don't know anything about GDPR, dude, it is so much more strict than HIPAA, I think. Mm-hmm. Even it if nothing is. Else from the breach reporting, they have 3 days. Breach reporting is 3 days. Can you imagine if we had to report breaches in 3 days? We don't even have a good, solid understanding of what happened in that time frame.
Right. So what you have to do is there's no wiggle room. You can't, once there is a potential for a breach, you got to tell everybody.
Yeah. I mean, you think breach reporting hitting the news a lot now. We're seeing people that are reporting breaches, you know, 90 days, 6 months, whatever. Yeah. This is 3 days, and you can best believe that the GDPR type stuff is going to eventually make its way across the water, and we're going to have it over here.
It's constantly being debated, and I don't think people realize just how much there's, you know, multiple proposals being floated around about a federal data breach notification, data privacy requirements, mm-hmm. all of those kind of things. And I can't imagine they could be a lot less from a security requirement piece than HIPAA.
No.
In fact, my guess is they'll be a little bit more and lean towards some other stuff. But the approaches that I've seen is if you will agree to do X, Y, and Z, then you can prove you're doing these things, then we'll put you in a separate pot of people if something goes wrong.
Yeah. I like to call it HIPAA for everyone.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
But having the ability to simply move me into a group of people that will not suffer as much if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's called insurance.
Yeah. But at that point, we'd just change the podcast. It would be, you know, help me with compliance.
or help me secure my crap. Yeah.
Help me not be in the 86% that has a strong negative impact.com.
Yeah. We keep thinking we're going to have a new name for our podcast. So.
Yeah. We're dealing more and more with privacy and security. And I mean, it's, you know,
it's going outside of healthcare more and more.
Security is not compliance, and compliance is not security.
we don't really talk that much about compliance as much as we talk about actually protecting the privacy and security of information.
Yeah. Well, one flows into the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, the bottom line is all businesses are suffering when they fail to do this properly. Healthcare suffers the most. And they have guidelines that they should have been following for 13 years now. So, the next piece kind of gets a little bit more scary when we get to the last little point that we're covering. But clearly, if we take immediate action, we know things probably will go better for us. And so that's what we have to be better at with our incident response plans and having some idea of what will happen and how it will be handled. But then we get to the part where it says, when personal data is exfiltrated in a data breach, and the Dark Overlord cases, some of the ransomware cases, the email account hacks, those kind of things, 48%. So we're going to say you got a 50-50 chance of consumers seeing the incident as a breach of their trust, and they stop using the online service that lost control of their data. Mm. So you've got people who won't come and use your business because they heard about the data breach, and you got people who leave your business. So you're losing customers, and you're not getting the customers you would have gotten in the first place, and you're not getting the ones to fill the gaps of the ones you lost. So it becomes very, very complicated from a statistical analysis, which you know I get all excited about numbers.
Well, that 50%, or well, it's 48, but you know, for the sake of the conversation, 50%, that is across the board though, right? That's not healthcare only. That's kind of the whole study.
Yeah. So yeah, healthcare that's across
is gonna,
the board.
Right. So healthcare is going to be higher, especially if we base it off the 86% and 83% strong negative impact we looked at earlier. Mm-hmm. So there's a much greater than 50% likelihood that you will lose patients.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you look at the dramatic difference between, well, even healthcare and the next one down, and ironically is advertising and media, but theirs is 70% and 74%. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still better than a 10% difference on each of those. So you got to assume that 48% number is going to be more like 58%, right, somewhere in there, because it starts falling. It's a precipitous drop after that. Yeah. See, I had to get a good, that's my dollar word, my 50 cent sentence. But then the last little stuff they covered was a little unnerving, because it talked about selling the information. Mm-hmm. And okay, you and I both know selling of the information is going on, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we know, well, information is your most valuable resource. We've established that. So if it's the most valuable resource, I want more of it. Mm-hmm. So everybody's trying to get that pristine data, the good, clean data, so that they can use it for marketing and you know, even, you know, not the bad guys kind of thing. What people want to do with it that you may not want them to do with it, you know, God forbid the telemarketers and all of that kind of stuff. And the emails of, hey, we spoke at such and such conference. No, we didn't. I'm one of the thousands of people that was there and I did not speak to you. So, anyhow, we'll leave that alone. But according to the survey, when they're talking about selling information, I would expect in healthcare that number would be low.
Okay.
We're not supposed to be doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. But for some reason, and maybe it's the way it's worded, Maybe it's the type of organizations that were involved. I don't know. But according to the survey, 80% of healthcare business executives say their terms of service allow them to share or sell your information.
Huh.
I don't know where that disconnect is.
I wonder if we're thinking about what.
Yeah. I got to do some, you know, more. And that doesn't make sense to me, especially when you say that another 74% of healthcare executives say that they're actually doing it.
I wonder if they're talking about sharing it with like other providers. There again, I'm kind of going, do they really understand the question? Or is it just, this is a really bad thing that we're not sure about?
Well, they might believe something's happening that's not.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they can do things that they can't do. Or it could be, yeah, I share the information. My terms of service say I can share the information. I'm not selling it. I'm sharing it to people as continuum of care. I don't know.
Yeah, or they could be selling it for marketing purposes as well.
Okay, that is a rabbit hole. when I got to that part of the report, I just stared for a minute. But across all the different executives say they admitted that consumers have no idea what's in the terms and conditions that they agree to every day.
I see that. I agree with that one.
And there's a lot of discussion, which we haven't even had yet, where insurance companies are buying data from places to evaluate your healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a big user of, you know, you're a member of one club and you've been a member for a long time and you're on their regular mailing list, they're high end, we know these people use our services, I'll buy that and I'll know them. And then the next thing is if you're a regular buyer of the local ice cream company, well, we're going to keep that in mind as well. So they're wanting to buy this information from all of these different, and you don't think anything about being on the mailing list for a steakhouse or whatever.
Yeah, when you get that Marlboro Rewards card, don't tell me you're not a smoker.
True. I mean, so you don't even think anything about being on their mailing list, but suddenly your insurance premiums go up because you are.
Yeah, that's
good. And there's a lot of speculation about how much that's happening or beginning to happen, so that they influence the premiums or deny coverage or say that's a pre-existing condition, blah, 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 where they're watching out for what you're doing because they're buying data that you wouldn't even worry about somebody selling it until you realize what they're going to do with it like this. So that is a whole nother discussion though. That's a rabbit hole that I went, oh my goodness, I can't go down this one right now, but I must mention it out of this report.
Mm, wow. Cool stuff.
Yeah, it's exciting. I know.
It is. All right, folks. That's our show for today. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure you did because we enjoyed giving it to you. Make sure you follow us on your social media site. Rate us. We appreciate the ratings we got from the few people we talked about at the beginning. So don't forget to continue to do that. We appreciate it. Help spread the word. Also, if you have any questions, you can also send those to us right from our homepage. Don't forget the HIPAA boot camp. We still have that open for now, I think, by the time this airs. Not sure. But check that out at thehipaabootcamp.com. So remember, for Donna and myself, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.